My name is Gabby Sklar, and I'm here to talk to you about the history of the city of Charleston in South Carolina. If you don't know much about this amazing city, let me give you a short rundown of some facts that you should probably know. Charleston is located along the Atlantic coast in the southeastern section of South Carolina. In 1980, it had a population of 69,510 with a 3.8% increase from 1970 during the division of both South and North Carolina. It has many places of access to water, such as the Edisto River, Foster Creek, and Goose Creek, receiving 42 million gallons of water, which is quite an advantage for Charleston. Charleston is known to have a port that reaches to ocean-going vessels connecting with other major ports around the world, having the largest port in the South Atlantic. In its early history, it allowed them to have the largest trade of rice and cotton in the Caribbean. These facts will be important for you to have in the back of your mind when I take you through the history of Charleston, because they all connect to one another, each having a prominent role in past events, so just make sure you're paying attention. Here we go. Starting in early history, around 1670, Charleston was founded and settled by English colonists. However, this city was not always called Charleston. It actually was originally called Charlestown for Charles II, which started during the beginning of their colonization. Being the commercial center of trade in rice and indigo, in 1680 it was known as Charles City and Port, reincorporated as Charleston in 1783. Charleston remained the seat of provincial Congress in 1772, creating the state of South Carolina. It was then named the capital in the following year. During the American Revolution, Charleston was held under British control from 1780 to 1782. It was under the defensive command of Benjamin Lincoln, where the British armies able to isolate Charleston as a whole. They entered the harbor where the Americans kept their ships and removed their cannon, forcing Lincoln to surrender. It wasn't until this legislature was moved to Columbia was Charleston able to free themselves from British restriction, allowing them to then prosper as a winter port in the U.S. until the War of 1812. Now, this is the start of many conflicts later to come. Charleston's history can be summarized by its many rebellions, wars, and conflicts. For example, you probably have only heard about the Boston Tea Party. Did you know there was two Charleston Tea Parties? Before the Boston Tea Party, the ship, London, arrived in Charlestown in 1773, carrying 257 chests of tea. However, the tea was confiscated and stored in the exchange, and no payments of tea taxes were even made. The citizens of Charlestown allowed the tea to remain in their hometown, only if it was locked away. In the following year, the second Tea Party consisted of the ship, Britannia, that arrived in Charleston, causing many people to be agitated by its arrival. There was an inquiry that did not want the stowaway tea to be unloaded, so the tea merchants dumped the chests overboard into the Cooper River. Bet you didn't hear that one, did ya? Continuing onward, we get to a time where racial tensions were high. Charleston was fully entrenched in slavery at this time as it was a part of the Deep South. In 1822, Denmark Vesey was a free black carpenter who organized the largest slave conspiracy in North American history. Denmark Vesey was a native of St. Thomas, known to be a man of the Black Atlantic. In December of 1799, Denmark purchased his freedom with lottery winnings. Back in 1818, the African church, located in Charleston, became the center of the enslaved community where he and his wife and friends joined. In the same year, the church was closed by city authorities, and 140 people that belonged to it were arrested. This only left the Black Carolinians even more motivated and determined to maintain the freedom to independently worship. At the age of 51, Denmark organized rebellion followed by a mass exodus from Charleston to Haiti, where President Jean-Pierre Boyer had recently encouraged Black Americans to bring their skills and work. Due to his past knowledge and current conditions in the South, Denmark realized they must not stay in Charleston long enough for white military power to present a counterassault. His plan for escape went on for 4 years, including chief lieutenants, and he was thought to have around 6,600 recruits included in the plan. On July 14th, also known as Bastille Day, was the day in which the slaves, armed with swords, plotted to kill their masters so they could sail to Haiti for freedom. However, In June 1822, when George Wilson, a member of the church, revealed the plan to his owners, Vesey was then captured and hung after a court hearing on July 2nd. Vesey's rebellion marks a time in history where tensions were running high between African-American slaves and the white establishment. Ultimately, the failure of this rebellion led to many laws passed preventing entry into the state as free blacks. The Negro Seamen Act prevented any free people of color on board in any vessel from any other state. Playing a prominent role in the Civil War, Fort Sumter in the Charleston Harbor was built in the aftermath of the War of 1812. The construction began in 1829 on a man-made island made up of thousands of tons of granite. Named after Revolutionary War General Thomas Sumter, the fort, along with 50 others, was built in conjunction with the Third System, a coastal defense program created by Congress in 1817. Major Robert Anderson occupied the unfinished fort in 1860, which was after South Carolina's secession from the Union that led to a standoff with the state's military forces. This is where things get dicey. The standoff occurred between the occupied Federal Union soldiers and the ensuing Confederate soldiers that wished to regain the fort. The Start of the West ship arrived in the Charleston Harbor carrying U.S. federal troops and supplies intended for Fort Sumter. The Southern Confederate soldiers fired militia batteries upon this ship, leaving them no choice but to turn around. After many calls and orders from Major Anderson to abandon the fort, the 3,000 Confederate troops surrounding the fort were getting less and less patient. Things started to come to an end when newly elected President Abraham Lincoln announced his plans to resupply the fort, as Anderson and his men were in desperate need of some supplies. In response to his order, Confederate General P.G.T. Beauregard once again demanded Anderson to give up the fort on April 11, 1861. After refusing, the Southern troops had lost all patience and decided to fire upon the fort on April 12. Beauregard's 19 coastal batteries unloaded 3,000 rounds in 34 hours. And after the walls began to give in, Major Anderson and his troops were finally forced to retreat. The South had finally gained the last piece of their ultimate secession from the United States. Fort Sumter was vitally important as it was ultimately the beginning of the Civil War. These were the first shots taken during the war and led to both sides, the Union and Confederates, bulking up for the inevitable war. Lincoln called for more Union volunteers, while Tennessee, Virginia, and North Carolina had joined the Southern cause. Charleston was a main leader in this Southern cause to fight back for state power. Anyways, Confederate soldiers armed the fort, and having possession of this allowed the Confederates to create a valuable hole in the Union blockade of the Atlantic seaboard. Not only this, but Fort Sumter, most importantly, protected the Charleston Harbor. Charles Coffin, a reporter from the Boston Journal, was one of the first newspapermen to reach Charleston after the Confederate military abandoned it in February 1865. Charles was in search of the city's largest slave market so he could report back to the readers in Massachusetts. On his search, he was approached by a woman named Dina Moore, one of the thousands of enslaved Africans who had passed through the gate as property. Around this time of the start of the Civil War, it marked the beginning of the end for the peculiar institution of slavery. By 1860, there were 4 million slaves in the United States, and 400,000 of them were located in South Carolina. African Americans made up 57% of the state's population. During the transatlantic slave trade, 40% of enslaved Africans were brought through the Charleston Harbor, making Charleston as the place where slavery began and became so big. In the newspaper Post and Courier, Benward Powers, a professor of history at the College of Charleston, says,
"This place is absolutely central to telling the story of slavery. I'm still amazed by how many people and their families are rooted here in South Carolina."
That being said, Charleston was the nation's capital of slave trade. It was built on slave labor, thriving under a slave economy. However, on July 1, 1856, the city of Charleston outlawed the sale of slaves on streets because locals found the action distracting and overall disturbing. On the same day, a place called Ryan's Mart, which was now the site of the city's old Slave Mart Museum, opened. This slave market consisted of owners that took a different approach and did not give any physical punishment to their slaves. They believed that if a slave was seen to have a slash mark on their body, it would scare off any potential buyers. Ryan's Mart was then shut down in 1863 when owners Thomas Ryan and X.B. Oakes went off to fight in the war, which resulted in the business falling off, and short after, Charleston was then under siege by Union troops. As the Civil War was in full force, on December 11, 1861, a major fire swept through Charleston, starting at the intersection of East Bay and Hassell Streets. It is not known for certain what exactly started the fires, but some accounts state that it was believed that slave refugees accidentally started the fire, whether it was cooking food or something else. Nevertheless, the weather proved to be Charleston's worst enemy at this point, as a nor'easter blew in, causing the flames to spread south and east across the peninsula with great intensity and high winds. This fire was unstoppable, as it burned over 540 acres along with homes, businesses, and churches. This left many people homeless as the fire destroyed much of Charleston. The city spent the rest of that year and much of the next cleaning the streets of debris. Not only did the fire leave many homeless and left most of the city in ruins, but it led to significant disruption during the actual fire. The following week, during the war, Union troops attempted to take over Rockville, but the fires were too strong and they were forced to retreat. Ultimately, the Great Fire of Charleston was a significant moment in its history and is still remembered to this day. As you can see, Charleston was fully entrenched in the Southern culture at the time. They were very much a part of slavery, and much of life in Charleston existed around this practice. Following the end of the Civil War and the eventual outlaw of slavery, Charleston was tasked with rebuilding. They had been devastated from both an economic standpoint and an infrastructure as well. The war had left its mark on Charleston. Charleston's slow recovery actually became their greatest asset, the historically significant architecture. Due to the lack of capital Charleston possessed, they were forced to repair these buildings rather than replacing them. This meant that following the reconstruction, they now possessed a large amount of historically significant architecture. Charleston slowly moved away from the dependence as a city on agriculture as a source of economy and moved toward trade and industry. In addition, they moved into the 20th century with the construction of the Navy Yard in 1904. With all this going down, the first few decades of the 1900s saw a significant increase in industrial and port activities. Ultimately, the creation of the naval base, along with medical and tourism industry opportunities, provided the significant source of capital Charleston needed. The consequences of the Civil War weighed heavy on Charleston, and it was not an easy rebuild, but eventually they were able to establish themselves again as an economically stable city. Overall, Charleston is defined by its wars, rebellions, and conflicts. The common thread throughout its history has been its involvement in many wars and battles, along with their significant place in the Southern Confederacy. Much of Charleston's presence was shaped by their past, and it can still be seen today. From the buildings to Fort Sumter to the historical museums, much of Charleston's past is evidenced by this. Visually, we still see the impact of war on this town's presence through these physical markers, and this has been important for the growth of the city. As it's always said, in order to move forward, we must never forget our past, no matter how ugly, and Charleston is a clear example of this.